Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with veteran New York Times foreign correspondent Chris Hedges, who was suing President Obama in federal court, challenging his powers under the National Defense Authorization Act. In advance of the president's 2013 State of the Union address, we will discuss what Chris Hedges expects from the address and why he feels America is becoming a corporate state that is seizing unchecked powers with a military system of justice that will criminalize dissent. Then we'll hear from Adele Stan, Alternet's Washington bureau chief, who has followed the Tea Party since its inception. We'll discuss the two successive Republican responses to Obama's State of the Union from two Tea Party senators, Marco Rubio and Rand Paul. We'll also look into whether the president will put the Republicans on notice as they are poised to let the sequester crash the barely recovering economy, thus throwing us back into recession and impoverishing millions of Americans. Then we look into whether the president has taken on too many challenges in his second term with gun control, immigration, global warming, jobs, and economic recovery. Mike Lux, the co-founder and CEO of Progressive Strategies, joins us to discuss what the president might be able to accomplish in his second term before the next midterm election and whether the Democrats could retake the House in 2014 and extend Obama's ability to govern before he becomes a lame duck. Then finally, we'll be joined by Tara McGinnis, the Executive Director of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We'll assess the likely impact of the president's address on the public and, more importantly, the Congress that remains implacably hostile to Obama's efforts to revive the economy and appoint his choices to his cabinet and fill the growing backlog of judicial appointments. Chris Hedges is a senior fellow at the Nation Institute. He previously spent nearly two decades as a foreign correspondent in Central America, the Middle East, Africa, and the Balkans, with 15 years at the New York Times, where in 2002 he was part of a team that won the Pulitzer Prize for coverage of global terrorism. He was also received the Amnesty International Global Award for Human Rights and is the author of the bestsellers War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning, American Fascists, Empire of Illusion, Death of the Liberal Class, and his latest, Days of Destruction, Days of Revolt. He has an article at truthdig.com, the NDAA and the Death of the Democratic State. Welcome, Chris Hedges.
Thank you.
And your sense of the State of the Union, I take it, will be quite different from what the president will deliver in an hour's time or less than an hour, where I take it, since you are suing the president in Hedges versus Obama in federal court, and it's likely to end up at the Supreme Court, I take it your sense is that the corporate state has handed the president tools to use deadly force and military power to criminalize dissent. I imagine that is not the message we'll hear tonight.
No, I mean, the Obama administration has in essence codified the destruction of both domestic and international law. And I would remind listeners that preemptive war under international law is illegal. It's defined as a criminal war of aggression. The assault on civil liberties under the Obama administration is more egregious than it has been or was under the Bush administration. The radical interpretation of the 2001 Authorization to Use Military Force Act as giving the executive branch the right to assassinate American citizens, the FISA Amendment Act, which retroactively makes legal what under our Constitution has traditionally been illegal, the warrantless wiretapping, monitoring, and eavesdropping of tens of millions of American citizens. And we know that our personal information is being stored in perpetuity in supercomputers in Utah. The use of the Espionage Act six times by the Obama administration to go after whistleblowers, the Espionage Act being our Foreign Secret Act, was not designed to shut down people who exposed government crimes, malfeasance, and lies, but that is how Obama has used it. Kiriakou, the CIA operative who purportedly gave information about war crimes to the New York Times, has just started a 30-month prison sentence. And then, as you mentioned, the National Defense Authorization Act, Section 1021, I sued the president last January in the Southern District Court of New York over this section of the NDAA, which permits the U.S. military, this is contravening 200 years of domestic law, to seize American citizens, strip them of due process, and hold them indefinitely in military facilities, including our offshore penal colonies. Now, we won that case. In September, Judge Catherine Forrest ruled in our favor. The response of the Obama administration was chilling. We knew they'd appeal. That wasn't a question. But they didn't just appeal. The ruling was made on a Friday. The government lawyers went to Judge Forrest and asked for a temporary stay of the injunction, meaning the law would be put back into effect until the appeal could be heard by the Second Circuit. Judge Forrest refused. The government attorneys then went to the Second Circuit. This was late on a Friday, and asked for an emergency hearing at 9 a.m. on Monday morning. They got it. The Second Circuit lifted the injunction, put the law back into effect, and that was a message both to myself and to the lawyers, Carl Mayer and Bruce Afron, who brought the case, that there's a very high likelihood that the law is already being used, probably to detain U.S. dual nationals, Pakistan U.S. nationals, in places like Bagram. Because if the injunction had been allowed to stand and the government was holding U.S. citizens and denying them due process, then of course they would be in contempt of court. So I have not found the rhetoric of Barack Obama or the Obama administration to match, in any way match the activities of the Obama administration, which, whether it's, a failure to rein in the malfeasance and criminal activity and fraud of Wall Street, the assault, the expansion of drilling, of course, the Obama administration has approved the southern leg of the Keystone XL pipeline and looks set now to approve the northern leg. It is a kind of utter disconnect between how this president and his administration presents himself and his policies to the American people and what he actually does.
It does seem, though, that he's driving his Republican opponents, particularly the guy that he beat in the 2008 election, who seems to be a real sore loser, John McCain, and, of course, Lindsey Graham, who's the architect of the NDAA, at least its primary sponsor, is doing everything he can to frustrate him. So it would seem that at least Obama has got the United States out of two wars, where McCain and Lindsey Graham, if McCain had been elected, he would have got us into two more, Syria and Iran. So do you see a difference there?
Well, first of all, in terms of the NDAA, this has bipartisan support. The bill was sponsored by McCain in 11, there's no daylight between the Republicans and the Democrats on this issue. Which is why you never hear about it on these partisan channels like Fox or MSNBC. In terms of going to war with Iran, the establishment, and in particular the Pentagon, wants nothing to do with it. If you remember, after Barack Obama was elected in November of 2008, there was a heavy push by Israel to get the Bush administration to strike against Iran, and they refused. In terms of intervening in Syria, I don't think that there's anybody within the established centers of power, both in the intelligence community and the Pentagon, that wants to start wading into Syria. Unlike Libya, it doesn't have oil. So I'm not completely convinced that a McCain administration would have started a war with either Iran or Syria. John McCain, unlike Newt Gingrich, is sane. What is frightening, of course, is that lunatic fringe of the Republican Party, because they're just completely unhinged, and they did a lot, of course, to elect Barack Obama, or contribute to the election of Barack Obama.
Well, at this point, they appear to be quite prepared to impoverish millions of their fellow Americans by creating a new recession, by forcing through these sequester cuts. And Economics 101 tells you that when you're in an economic recovery, the last thing you need is austerity. So what explains that? Is that ideology or ignorance, or do they have some other agenda?
Well, they serve, they cravenly serve corporate interests. There's a business term, it's called harvesting, where you take over a corporation and cannibalize it and destroy it and extract the last vestiges of profit from it on the way down. Well, that's basically what the corporate state is doing to the nation writ large. Barack Obama has offered, at best, very tepid opposition to this. You know, as Paul Krugman writes week after week, what we really needed is, of course, a massive jobs program, especially targeted to people under the age of 25, a rational health care system. Obamacare was written by corporate lobbyists, $447 billion in subsidies to the pharmaceutical and insurance industry, in essence the equivalent of the bank bailout bill for those industries, and copayments and premiums can skyrocket, especially if you're ill. The failure to confront the housing crisis, the foreclosures and the bank repossessions, the failure to rein in Wall Street, which is well on its way towards inflating the economy towards another crash, borrowing money at basically 0% interest and then letting it back to us at usury rates, if you're late on your credit card, of close to 30%. I'm not sure what that is. It's certainly not capitalism. So I don't see that Barack Obama, in terms of his policies, has done anything to stand up for working men and women, and in fact has aided and abetted this corporate assault.
Well, just in closing, Chris Hedges, the president has tonight apparently an elderly Haitian-American woman who stood 6 hours in line joining, or at least the First Lady, she's joining her party at the State of the Union. And that leads us to the question of voter suppression. And, of course, both parties have gerrymandered enormously. Lately, the Republicans seem to have an advantage in gerrymandering, and they've already sort of even floated the idea of changing the Electoral College in order to overcome their demographic problems. They basically have a plan to cheat. So if we do have a corporate state and a kind of game show democracy, it would seem that at least there is a difference between the two parties. One wants people to vote and the other one doesn't want people to vote, particularly what...
Well, the Democratic Party understands that, if you're part of the poor or the working class, you usually don't have anywhere else to go. That's not always true, of course, in the South. So this is a jockeying for, pieces of the prize. But I'm not sure that at this point there are significant differences between the Democrats and the Republicans. I mean, the Democratic Party in Europe, where I used to live, would be considered a far-right party. It embraces torture. It calls for the expansion of imperial wars. It draws up kill lists. These are just absolutely staggering things to embrace. It's utterly failed to stand up to Wall Street. The suffering, and this is something that Joe Sacco and I spent the last 2 years chronicling in our sacrifice zones, these pockets of misery that have been rendered courtesy of a corporate media virtually invisible, has turned whole pockets of the United States into, in essence, a third world country. So I'm not saying that there aren't differences between Obama and McCain. There are. I'm not saying that there are not differences between the Republicans and the Democrats. There are. I certainly find Obama as a personally more palatable than a figure like Romney. And yet I think that the people who have their hands on the levers of power do not significantly change from one administration to the next.
So given the president is somewhat spreading himself thin, the gun control issue was foisted on him by the massacre. He also wants to deal with immigration and gay rights, etc. What about global warming? Not to be too apocalyptic, but frankly, the planet is endangered and ignorance is preventing us in this country from grasping the looming reality, even though nature is telling us with these superstorms. Do you expect anything on that front?
No, and, whether it's Kyoto or Durban or Copenhagen during the Obama administration, Obama and his administration virtually wash their hands of it because they don't want to take on the fossil fuel industry. And you're right. The most dire predictions of climate scientists of even a few years ago now look modest and restrained, given that 40% of the summer Arctic sea ice melted. And what is the response of the corporate state? Well, Shell Oil is up there dropping $500 million bids. to extract profit from the death throes of the planet. Another, we just on the East Coast lived through Hurricane Sandy, over $70 billion worth of damage. Well, wait till the next hurricane season rolls around and it's a Category 2 instead of a Category 1. Wait till we hit, that these infrastructures can't sustain that kind of damage and finally continually be rebuilt. I think that we're in extremely serious trouble in terms of the ecosystem and the Obama administration. This will, whoever writes history in the future, I think will look back and consider this the greatest failing of the Obama administration, not to stand up and radically reconfigure our relationship to each other and to the ecosystem to provide a sustainable world for future generations.
Well, Chris Hedges, I thank you so much for joining us here on the eve of President Obama's State of the Union Address.
Thank you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Chris Hedges, who's a senior fellow at the Nation Institute. He previously spent nearly two decades as a foreign correspondent in Central America, the Middle East, Africa, and the Balkans, with 15 years at the New York Times, where in 2002 he's part of a team that won the Pulitzer Prize for coverage of global terrorism. He also received the Amnesty International Global Award for Human Rights and is the author of the bestsellers War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning, American Fascists, Empire of Illusion, Death of the Liberal Class, and his latest Days of Destruction, Days of Revolt. He has an article at truthdig.com, The NDAA and the Death of the Democratic State. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back joined by Adele Stand, Alternet's Washington Bureau Chief. What's my name?